Stacey Corcoran Podcast.
Reindeer in the night, Donner and Blitzen, flying through the sky with their friend Vixen. They'll hit every house before the night is through. Somewhere in that sleigh is good old Saint Nick. He's got a barf bag in case he gets sick. He's had too much milk and all those cookies too. Reindeer in the night, eight flying mammals, and they're on their yearly flight. They're pulling Santa and he's kinda hard to lift. Each year there's more gifts down your chimney, ho, 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 unless you live in a condo. Yes, it's quite a sight to see them flying. Rudolph's nose so bright, it's almost blinding, like furry satellites, them reindeer in the night.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Tuesday, December 21st, 2021, 322 days remaining in our American system of democracy that we have come to know and love. JC here at jconline.com. I'll tell you one thing. If I was a lawyer and I had a client that was on national TV because the trials in this particular case, this Kim Potter, this former officer charged with killing Dante Wright, I would tell my client, you're going to get on the witness stand. Don't try to cry unless you can actually produce tears. Now, for some reason, it didn't seem to hurt Kyle Rittenhouse because he did the exact same thing. He's up there crying, and then you see him look at the judge out of the corner of his eye and look at the jury out of the corner of his eye. He's like, am I getting through here? Are they responding to me crying here? There's no tears. There's no tears. Now, she does the same thing yesterday. She's sitting up there in the witness stand. I don't know if she should be convicted or not. I don't know. I haven't been following that trial as much. But when I see somebody putting on like a bad soap opera clinic, bad acting, it's like, what are you guys doing? Well, here's one of the stories. Here,
Kim Potter. She was charged with manslaughter for the deadly shooting of Dante Wright.
Yeah, well, we know all that. We know all that. But anyway, thank you, Randy. They keep showing this video over and over again of her in the witness stand where she seems to be having like an emotional breakdown and there's no tears. Now, there are actors that I've had conversations with. And I used to ask him about this all the time. You go see a movie, and somebody would be just blubbering away there. And I would say, how do you cry? You must think of something that makes you cry. I had one person a long time ago. It was an amateur actor. But he told me that he pulls a nose hair out. And let me tell you, that'll do it too. That will do it. But if I was a lawyer, I'd say, don't get up on that witness stand and pretend to cry unless you can do it. You got to like think of like when you're 8 years old and your puppy got run over by a garbage truck or something. Think about that so that you actually produce some tears. But whatever you do, don't get up there and don't cry while you're trying to. All right, winter begins today. It's 28 degrees here at 7 o'clock in the morning. Going to be pushing 70 I think it's on Christmas Eve, if I'm not mistaken, 70 degrees just about. And they're saying that this tornado, not the one that hit Edwardsville, but the one that hit Kentucky a week ago, they're saying that this thing might be, when all the numbers are in, might be classified as the most powerful tornado that has ever struck this continent. And that is saying something. You know, the majority of tornadoes are, like the small ones. And they're on the ground for an average of about 30 seconds, sometimes 2 minutes. And then they dissipate and the funnel goes back up in the clouds and that's the end of it. Those tornadoes don't make the news, though, so you don't hear anything about them. But those are the ones that we have in this country more than any other kind. But these things are called long track tornadoes. And those other thing was on the ground for like 200 miles. You know, when you're learning about astronomy, whether it is in school or whether it's something you're doing on your own because you just happen to like, you know, the heavenly bodies, okay? And so you read up about that sort of stuff in magazines and online because you just happen to like the whole idea of looking out into outer space and that sort of stuff. And you know, when you're first hearing about certain activities, weather and climatological data starts coming in, and you're reading about these violent storms on Jupiter or something on Saturn, these uninhabitable conditions, and you know, Mars at night gets to like 200 below and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure somebody is watching us going, hey, you know, that little thing, that little blue planet that's over there on the edge of the Milky Way. You know what? We found out they have these things, like these winds that go in a circle with a vortex, and people are just out barbecuing and stuff like that. Barbecuing, yes. It's like Beldar Conehead would say, you know. Pieces of animal flesh burnt to a crisp on an open fire. Mibs, mibs. And I'm sure they're looking at us going, man, oh man, I can't believe that there's life on that planet. All depends on your perspective. All depends on your perspective. Ain't going to be any hockey for at least a week, and you can see this coming. It's probably going to be longer than that, but they're starting out with a week. The NHL, they are saying that they are pausing their season until after Christmas. Blues were supposed to play in Ottawa tonight, all of the NHL games. Everybody's getting a vacation, which could be a good thing. You got all the bumps and bruises that you sustain as a National Hockey League athlete over the course of a season. And to be able to have a week to just heal up and know that, you know, you have sore ribs and you're going to be able to let those things rest and heal and feel better and come back stronger and be a better hockey player. That's the upside. The downside is there's no fucking hockey. You know, this country, this continent is getting exactly what it deserves. The scientists and the doctors have defined the problem. They know how to fix it. They're giving you stuff usually for free to be able to fix it. And people won't fix it because you still got these dopes. I don't know. Although I posted this yesterday from a friend of mine in Buffalo, Scott Fleetwood, who actually used to be one of my interns back in the day when I was in Buffalo before I got to St. Louis. Here's what he wrote. I refuse to put on snow tires because it's my car, my choice, my freedom. The effectiveness of winter tires is not proven except by studies carried out by the manufacturers, like I'm supposed to trust them. My neighbor Bob had an accident. Even after putting on snow tires, some drivers are already on their third set of tires, which proves their ineffectiveness. We don't know what the tires are made of. The tire manufacturers scare us with winter just to enrich themselves. In fact, I read on the internet that the tire giants invented snow and spread it at night when you sleep. If you have winter tires, the government can track me in the snow. Educate yourself. Open your eyes, people. Stop being sheep. This year, I say no to snow tires. See how dumb that sounds? 5 states have the National Guard out right now. I didn't know anything about that. 5 states have the National Guard out to, ensure that there's order and also to try to help out the hospitals, many of which are already overloaded, and this thing hasn't even peaked yet. And then Trump and Bill O'Reilly are doing that stadium tour thing, the half-empty tour, which is what the auditoriums are. They were charging $200 a pop to get in there to see those two clowns. And, they weren't selling any tickets, so they started they dropped it to $40, and then they just started giving them away. And even then, the places were still half empty. I don't know. And again, you can say, well, it's the week before Christmas. You know, people are busy. Well, you know, and I'm sure there's something to that. But I don't think that's all that it is. But anyhow, they're sitting on stage the other night for the crowd that does show up. And Trump says, oh, yeah, I got the booster. And O'Reilly says, oh, yeah, I got the booster. You know what happens? The crowd starts booing them. And I don't mean like a couple of sporadic boos. It got to the point where Trump said, hey, cut it out. Knock all that off. His own people turning on him. Palin, that would be Sarah, goes on stage the other night at some, you know, symposium of some sort and says, I'll get a shot over my dead body. I'm okay with that. Denise Richards getting blowback because she was photographed on a plane a couple of days ago not wearing a mask. Now, she said, I have my coat pulled up over my face, and it's much thicker. Denise, you're pretty. And as guys discuss when they're not around their wives and the girlfriends, we talk about the fact that she's got a nice rack. But, Denise, what you said there was stupid, okay? Then again, she was married to Charlie Sheen for a while, so she probably has every antibody known to man floating around in her system somewhere. New York City trying to decide whether or not they're going to have to cancel their New Year's Eve celebrations. All these things are televised. You know, you got Anderson Cooper out there. You got, I think you got Ryan Seacrest out there. This is how far we've come as a society. About the time I hit St. Louis, early to mid 1980s, I remember on New Year's Eve you had Dick Clark, but you still had Guy Lombardo. Guy Lombardo was still on network TV into the 1980s. It was like Lawrence Welk, except older than that and slower than that, and music more intolerable than that. Well, anyhow, Joe Biden's going to go on television tonight and try to spin this thing, and you know where this is going. He's going to tell people to get vaccinated, and if you are vaccinated, get the booster, and that we're looking at a really, really dangerous situation here. But it's like Bill Maher was saying on with Chris Cuomo a couple of weeks ago before they pulled the plug on Cuomo's show, and Bill Maher said, well, the problem we have right now is that both sides hate one another. And if you hate the other person who represents the other side, you don't listen to a word they say. And it's all bullshit then. And until we get past that, we're not going anywhere. And it'll be interesting to see tonight if Biden brings up the whole thing with Joe Manchin. You know, there was a talk show host in Virginia who had the interview with him over the weekend. where Manchin, for the first time publicly, said, yeah, I'm not voting for this thing. The talk show host was going, well, hold, whoa, back up. What did you just say? And that soundbite got distributed all over the country, and that's what started this shitstorm now with Joe Manchin. But that same talk show host says, you got to understand something. I know this guy. I've been covering for him a long time, and I know it's really easy to say, oh, he drives a Lamborghini, he lives on a yacht, and you know he's fighting off things that would help his own constituents in the state of West Virginia. But just if Joe Manchin feels pushed, manipulated, or not taken seriously, marginalized, all that sort of stuff, that's when he gets mad and that's when he shuts down. So he said, if you want this thing to move forward, keep talking. And apparently Biden and Manchin are pals and they get along, and even the phone call they had after Manchin made this announcement over the weekend, they said no, they talked the other day, it was very cordial. So who knows, there's still lines of communication that are open. It's like I always say, the cops will tell you. Sam Dotson, who of course was married to Karen Kelly, who was our co-host and producer on the show for a lot of years, and then of course he became police chief and was right in the midst of all that Ferguson stuff and everything. And I've known Sam, oh my God, I've known Sam since he was an intern at KWK. I have a picture of Sam Dotson in the KWK studios with Davy Jones from the Monkees, who was in town around, I guess it was 84, 85. And Sam was going to get into broadcasting. Then he saw what shit money they pay 99% of the people in the broadcast industry. And he said, I think I'll become a cop. But, you know, he walked the beat for a while. He didn't, you know, just put on a uniform and say, now I'm chief. He walked a beat for a long time. He worked the tough districts in the inner cities areas of St. Louis. And it was very clear that he was a superstar right from the beginning. And they're like, no, this guy is too bright to be in this capacity. And they made him a hostage negotiator, which meant that, you know, his pager, and that's when we had pagers, his pager would go off at 3 a.m. He'd have to put his uniform on and go into the city somewhere and, you know, try to talk some guy into coming out of his crack house and to let his hostages go. That was his job. He would get on the phone with them, and, you know, he had a very calm sort of demeanor. He would try to talk sense to the guy. And a lot of times, you know, if you do your job right and you got the right set of circumstances, the guy would say, yeah, you're right. Just put down your gun and just come on. Let's come out and talk about this. We're going to have to go down to the station because you caused a ruckus here. You turned the neighborhood upside down. You scared a lot of people. So we got to take you in. But we're going to be okay. We're not going to beat you up or anything. Just give yourself up right now. And so this would be his job. He would talk to the guy like this. Guy would lay down his rifle, whatever it was, and then come out. And they would take him downstairs where they would summarily beat him to a pulp. Oops, you messed up. You trusted us. And really, really interesting. He told me stuff that I probably shouldn't repeat about the systems that they have to get people to come out of places at 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of a crack house, you know. And the one thing, though, that he did talk about on the air, so I feel okay discussing this, was something called an energy ball. And police and SWAT teams have this thing, and apparently it's shot out of this bazooka-like weapon. It busts the glass, and it starts bouncing around in the house, like uncontrollably just bouncing. Remember Super Balls back in the 60s and the 70s? You know, bounce this thing. You could bounce it like 70 feet in the air. So I don't know what it was made of, but this thing would be bouncing around inside the house, you know, knocking stuff over and putting holes in walls, you know, doing damage. And while that's going on, then they would rush the house and try to take the guy in. It sounds to me like something that would work, and apparently it did. You got this thing, you know, tearing the inside of your house apart. You can just imagine your surprise. I mean, you're already under an incredibly stressful situation, which, of course, you have created. You see that the police have completely surrounded your house. You have all the flashing lights. You got your phone is ringing because they're trying to talk to you into coming out. And now all of a sudden, bang, boom, boom, boom. And this thing's bouncing around your house. And you're like, what the fuck? And that's when they rush the house and take you in. What does that story have to do with anything? Well, it has to do with hostage negotiators. And they will tell you that, let's say you're in a bank, okay? And in come the bank robbers, and they take you hostage. And they sit your asses down against the wall, and you're all sitting there. And as long as there is conversation between the bank robbers and the hostages, you got a good chance of getting out. But if they put a hood over your head, that's pretty much it. Say your prayers, and it's good night, Irene. Because if they depersonalize you, they do dehumanize you, and now you're not a human being, a mother, a father, you know, you're just a lump that's sort of in the way of them and their attempt to try to get out of the bank. So if you apply that principle to the situation between Joe Biden and Joe Manchin, as long as they're still talking, maybe we got a chance. I agree. I went a long way for that one. It's all right. And now this.
Old St. Nick's got bourbon breath. It's so cold you could catch your death. A cop sold me some crystal meth. It's a merry f***ing Christmas. Everything's so Christmassy. The streets are twinkling with frozen pee. My priest just sat on Santa's knee. It's a merry f***ing Christmas. All the kids go to bed each night to dream what Santa brings them. Unless they're Jewish or Muslim or some other chip religion. Crappy toys flying off the shelves. Midgets dressed up to look like elves. Spread good cheer or burn in hell. It's a merry f***ing Christmas. All the
kids go to bed each night to dream what Santa brings them, unless they're Jewish or Muslim or some other gyp religion. Crackling fires to keep me warm,
and my collection of Asian porn.
Cradle my bells and work my horn. It's a keep on trucking, last year sucking, midget chucking, slap the puckin'. How much wood could a woodchuck check in? Merry f***ing Christmas!
Ho, ho, ho!
Shut up.
I'm sorry you had to hear that. All right, Lorne Michaels was featured on CBS's The Morning Show the other night in 1975. Everybody knows the story. He created this thing called, well, at the time it was called NBC Saturday Night. It didn't morph into Saturday Night Live until, I guess it was 2 or 3 years later. People weren't calling it NBC Saturday Night. They were calling it Saturday Night Live, and finally they just gave in and said we're changing the name of the show. But it started out not called SNL. But he's been there since the beginning. He did take, I think it was 2 years off in, it was 80, 81, 82, right in there. And they had a woman who worked for Woody Allen by the name of Jean Demanian. And she took over the show for those 2 years, and it was just awful. And they had rotten cast members, and the cast members weren't happy, and the shows stunk. The show almost ended up getting canceled. And then Lorne came back, and it took him a couple of years to right the ship. And in fact, in, I think it was 87, if it wasn't 87, it was 88, but it was right in there somewhere, the NBC suits, in fact, did cancel the show. They canceled it. And Lorne Michaels picked up the phone, called him, and said, look, I got a nucleus. I know the ratings haven't been good and the shows haven't been good. I understand all that. But we just added a couple of people. This is when they brought in Nora Dunn and Kevin Nealon, Dana Carvey, Dennis Miller, people like that. And he says, I think I got a real good group here. Just give me another 6 months and let's see if we can pull this off, which of course he did, and the rest is history. And so he's getting old. We all are, all right? So Gail King says to him, well, how much longer are you going to do the job? And he says, well, if I stay 3 more years, that will mean that the show has been on 50 years, and that might be a good time to step away. And she says, can there be a good Saturday Night Live to continue like this without Lorne Michaels? He's like, oh, yeah, absolutely, sure. So do you have any idea who you're going to hand the reins to? He goes, we got a pretty good idea, but would not even give a hint or a clue. That, to me, is a challenge because now I want to know who it is. So I will be on the phone all day today with all of my contacts in New York and L.A., and I have some real good ones. And I'll see if anybody wants to take a stab at it. But it might be, it might end up people just guessing. Who knows? You never really know. All right, birthdays today. Kiefer Sutherland was born on this date in 1966. Rafe Fiennes. And I've interviewed him a couple of times, and I never, ever would have imagined that he would ever end up doing comedy. He seemed like the most serious guy in the world. And then, you know, he starts showing up in comedies. Now, a lot of them are really black comedies. One of my all-time favorite movies is called In Bruges. In Bruges. I'd say it came out about 12, 13, 14 years ago. And it's a little village, a little hamlet overseas. And he didn't even show up until about the last maybe 35, 40 minutes of the movie, but just steals every scene he's in. And as I said, very, very black comedy, but awfully, awfully good. He was born on this date, 1962. And Frank Zappa, who we now have reduced to pretty much just a distant memory, was born on this date in 1940. And I got to meet him a couple of different times. I got to interview him a couple of different times. I wouldn't go so far as to say we sort of got to know one another, but I got real good access to him, and I did spend a lot of time talking to him. And as I said, I don't know where this tape is. I know it exists somewhere. I just haven't found it. But he said one of the seriously funniest things ever, and it was back in the mid-80s when the Ayatollah Khomeini outlawed all music in Iran, and not having any idea where he was going to go or how he was going to answer this question, but also knowing how full of the devil Frank Zappa was. And boy, he was a brilliant guy. He's one of those guys that when you're talking to him, you got the sense that he was only using about 3% of his brain to engage in conversation with you. But I said, but again, just like it was almost like an improv exercise, I said to him, Frank, just out of curiosity, if Ayatollah Khomeini was a musician, what do you think he'd play? What instrument would he would play? And Zappa says, without missing a beat, some sort of flute. I'm telling you, oh, God, get that prostate checked, man. Get that prostate checked. It did Frank in. I think he was only something like 53 when he passed away. Oh, and by the way, just to backtrack again, I made a note and then I forgot to mention this because people always start asking. I always give the email address and Facebook account and all that sort of stuff at the end of the podcast, but let me just see if I can save you a step here. The opening song today, the Frank Sinatra impersonator, his name is Mr. Bob Francis. Mr. Bob Francis. And some of his stuff is floating around on the internet. So you got that. And then that song I just played a moment ago was Dennis Leary. So now you know. On this date in 2004, I was at Mid Rivers Mall doing a book signing for the second book that I wrote, which was called 20 Years of JC, The Man, The Legend, The Lawsuit. And many of you, there were, I think, just over 300 people in line when we got there to buy the book. You're smart. You know, we put it out at Christmas time. All right. So my dad says, I'll come and I'll just sit with you while you're signing the books. You know, it'll just be fun for me to watch. Almost every person who bought a book that night wanted my dad's signature in it too. It was one of the greatest nights of his life. I can't thank those of you who did stuff like that. You know, even if you just said hello to my dad at some of the baseball games, you know, the Cubs would come to town. He'd drive down from Chicago and then later from Wisconsin, and we'd go see a ball game. And hello, Mr. Corcoran, how you doing? You know, oh, we hate the Cubs, but we love you. You know, that sort of stuff. Oh, my God. One of the greatest nights of his life. And one of my favorite stories happened on this date in 1985. Now, keep in mind, I got here in 1984, and I'm doing the morning zoo with John Hewlett, the whole thing, and the company that owns the radio station at the time sends out invitations for the radio station, the staff Christmas party. And, you know, you're reading it, it's going to be on this night at this time, or we're going to have this, we're going to have that. And the theme of the Christmas party is the 1950s. And everybody's looking at each other like, huh? The theme is Christmas. That would be like saying the theme for Mother's Day this year is we want everybody to dress like a lumberjack. That's the theme. The theme is mother, okay? That's why it's called Mother's Day. So we're sort of looking around, oh, wait a minute, that's right. All of the owners, the lawyers, and a lot of the administrators at that time were Jewish. So I guess they felt that Christmas needed to have a theme. So I had to show up at this thing late. And I come walking in and, you know, seeing the secretaries from the radio station or something like that, like poodle skirts. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I was one of the few people that did not dress up in 1950s style. I would have felt like a complete idiot. I'm walking in, I'm wearing a windbreaker. And remember those windbreakers? And somebody says to me, why do you dress up? 50s theme. And I say, this is how I dress when the temperature is in the 50s. They didn't laugh. And then after being sort of an asshole about the thing, they served us dinner. And then they gave, not everybody on the entire staff, but all of the people who are on the air, gave them all a brand new color TV. And then I felt really bad. And I would be gone from that radio station less than a year later. That may have contributed to it. I don't know. And finally, if you missed my review of American Underdog, the story about Kurt and Brenda Warner, the review we did yesterday morning is still up there because we archive all of our old podcasts. So just click on yesterday's podcast, and about the last 10 minutes, I discuss the whole thing. But you know what I did yesterday? If you were listening yesterday, you know one of my main criticisms of the movie is that they didn't do enough with like hair, makeup, and lighting when they were trying to depict Kurt and Brenda Warner as like college age. So I looked this up. Kurt is 50 right now. Brenda is 54. So that means Kurt was 21 when this story in American Underdog begins. He was 21. Zach Levi is 41. So he's trying to play somebody who's 20 years younger than he is right now. Brenda, at the time of all this, was 26. Anna Paquin is 39. So she's trying to depict somebody, you know, about 15 years younger. And they shouldn't have done that. They just shouldn't have done that. That's one of the major flaws of the movie, although I'm still recommending it. It's definitely worth seeing, especially if you're from St. Louis, and especially if you're a football fan, and especially if you're fans of Kurt and or Brenda Warner. So again, the movie opens on Christmas Day. Speaking of Christmas Day, a lot of people have abandoned you. You know, like, oh, I'm taking some time off for Christmas, so long. Not me. I'll be here for a couple of more days. We might take some time off after Christmas. I haven't even decided that yet. But at least for the next couple of days, you'll have something to listen to for at least 30 minutes. And that's how we do it. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. 322 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. As we said, we archive everything right here on the jcontheline.com website. You can follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Email jc at jcontheline.com. We are in the top 10% of all podcasts in the nation, and we thank you, we thank you, we thank you. Have a great day, everybody. We've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.